Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Broncos fans, and welcome to this week's episode of Broncos Weekly. As always, I'm Mitch, and I'm joined on the line by our good friend, Simo. How you doing, Simo?
Yeah, pretty good. You?
Mate, not too bad. Not too bad. As I said to you off mic, I'm currently house-sitting in the middle of nowhere. I'm not going to give too many details away. But, yeah, I'm out and about, and it's not too bad looking after this huge staffy. And he's all right. He's... I don't know, you've got a small dog, hey, but big dogs, they don't understand what size they are. And I've hadn't had a big dog for a while, and I forgot that, like, doesn't matter you're 50 kilos, mate, he thinks he's 5 kilos.
Yeah, well, yeah, we got Alfie, he's only, like, 14 kilos, a little Cocker Spaniel, so if he, you know, runs and jumps up on you or jumps in your lab, like, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, it's not, well, it's like he was, I've never played with a staffy in my life. I had a big dog when I was younger, but it was a Weimaraner, they weren't as big, heavy-chested. But yesterday I was throwing a rope for him. And then in just the middle of playing, it just the way they like move and growl, my missus thought he was going to kill me. Because he ran at me and like stepped and like barked. But it was like, you know how dogs run around and jump around? Yeah. It was just in play mode. But she thought it was like kill mode engaged. And it was all over.
We had, this my cousin did this, but, and this is why you never tell anybody like baby names you're thinking about. Yeah. But his sister, they must have been talking about baby names and was like, oh, I want a name. One day in the future, I'll have a son, and I want to name him Malachi. And then he, like, a day later went out and bought a staffy and named it Malachi.
Well, he saved them from that name for a human.
But, yeah, staffies, they're solid fellas.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of bad pet names, my good friend Edwin Smith on the weekend found that his cat was called Roger growing up. What a terrible Roger. Name for a cat, Roger.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, it's not really a cat name.
It's a shit name for a human, let alone a fucking cat. <It's terrible. laughs> Anyway, enough pet and cat chat. My apologies. This is, well, not really my fault. I'm getting out of the missus under the bus. But it's on me that we are recording late this week. We had planned on recording Wednesday night, and me and Anastasia went out for some Guzman, about half an hour's drive from my house. Drove out there, had some Mexican, drove home. And literally the moment I turn the car off, she goes, oh shit, I haven't got my handbag. And my first immediate panic was like, her passport's in there. So my first thing in my head was like, oh shit, we have to go to the embassy tomorrow. And then my second thing was like, oh shit, I got to tell Simo. But I reached out to you and it took me an hour and a half for her to get back. So we couldn't record in the night. We went back to Guzman, did get the handbag and the passport, but obviously the fans aren't here to listen to Passport Weekly, so yeah.
Those passports are worth a fair bit too, if you're having nefarious intentions.
Mate, and Russian passport's not worth much, mate. Nobody wants that one.
Oh, well, yeah, I was going to say, mine was a bit different when I was worried about losing it because it's an Australian passport overseas. They're worth a fair bit, Aussie ones, so...
Yeah, mate, but luckily we got it there, because like, I was just thinking, like, during coronavirus, losing your passport right now, and she's in the middle of, like, visa applications, it's like, yeah, this is fantastic. This is goddamn superb, I was thinking, and I didn't speed on the way there, but I didn't respect the rules of the road.
You didn't just ring the store?
Oh, we tried, mate, and she eventually got onto them after, like, I was more than halfway there.
Okay.
But I called it first and they didn't pick up, and then I called again. Like, it was like first, it's like press for delivery, press for general inquiries. I called, press for general inquiries, nothing. Press for, like, I've ordered food, nothing. And then I'm like, screw it, I'm driving. Just drove, and then she started calling. And eventually they picked up about halfway there, and they got her bag. But, yeah, here we are. And I guess, you know, I thought we maybe would have cooled off after the Roosters loss, but I still haven't cooled off, giving us time. But essentially this episode, we're not really going to review either of the... We'll talk about both games that we just missed. The 59-0 from the Roosters and the 20-18 loss to the Seagulls. We won't really give either a full review. I don't think the 59-0 game deserves a review. And we haven't really got a full preview for next week's episode either, because this is recorded a day before team lists are out. But this is what we're playing with. You get low-effort team, you get a low-effort podcast, okay? So we're going to do questions first. And yep. Then we'll do a bit of Broncos news. And then just chat a bit about the games, how they've been.
Right, yeah. There's just a pile of questions, I guess, because it's about a week old at this point. Some of them mightn't be relevant, but we'll just see how we go. Starting on Facebook, as always, from Stephen Carter, he said, do you think the reason we're not winning is because I'm not drinking the Milton Mangoes while I'm watching them play? I'll get some on game day and see if it helps.
Mate, look, it can't hurt. You know, I'm not a superstitious person, but I'm desperate. By the way, I guess you have to know what a Milton Mango is to be listening to this podcast, but other fans are listening for our misery. He's referring to Forex Goals, okay? So welcome, fans of the Roosters and Knights and whoever Butsy. Else is here. Butsy, g'day Butsy, you're here again. But yeah, it's Forex Gold he's talking about.
From Matt Weston. If Seabold was told he could test himself on the open market, what would he be offered, and why is the answer $36.50 in a packet of Tim Tams?
Mate, I'm shocked you get an offer.
I'm shocked you get the Tim Tams.
That's it, mate. 100%. Like, I don't know if he'd get an offer if he was available right now. Like, I know there's some teams with poor coaches that it might be out soon. Like, you know, there's Paul McGregor who might lose his job quite soon. Maybe Stephen Kearney loses his job soon. I don't think so. I take Kearney over Seabold, by the way. But anyway, there's him. There's John Morris at the Sharks. There's Dean Pay. I don't know. I don't know if any of them would jump onto Anthony Seabold's track record.
I don't know if he'd get a job straight away. He'd get one the year after.
Probably get one eventually. Yeah, you're right.
All coaching's just a merry-go-round of old has-beens.
Yeah, well, it generally takes like failing. Actually, it takes like failing twice to be done, doesn't it? Like, you know, they wouldn't call the South tenure a failure, so it'd be like this would be one failure, then another one.
From David Ryland, I see Boyd as another winger who he won't pass the ball to. No wonder Oates ended up in the second row. From Jimmy Maher, Brad Thorne still looks fit as. Surely we can pay him more than the Reds to come be our captain coach.
He has done a terrible job coaching the Reds, so
Reds.
It is the Reds, but it's Aussie rugby, and he let good players go with that weird drawing, that weird line in the sand, like Quade Cooper and similar. Carmichael Hunt, you know, they left, and then they haven't been good. I don't want Brad Thorne.
You can't tell me if you hired him as the captain coach and was like, you don't get to make any personnel decisions, you just pick the 17 and coach them, that he wouldn't be better than Seabold.
He'd probably be more inspiring. I think you might make a point there. Like,
especially like he used to play for the... Like he played for... If we're bringing back the old boys, he's one of them that played here in the golden era.
Yeah, I mean, I know, like, I'm getting more worried. I'm really scared of, say, if we punted Seabold this year or next year, I'm really scared of us, not even just that, us becoming the Bulldogs and doing what you just said, bringing back someone who just understands the Broncos. And it's like, no, the guy who understood the Broncos and built the Broncos got sacked twice. There's no one else who understands them more than that. It's the way forward for this Broncos is not bringing back an old boy, unfortunately. Like, and I am very scared of the next coach just being straight default to Kevy or similar ilk just because they were a Bronco.
We don't even have, like, a sexy catchphrase like Dogs of War to shout out when we bring back one of the old boys.
We don't, like, at all.
From Michael Patterson, I'm a long-time Broncos supporter, but Boyd seriously needs to be cut. No disagreeing there. Scotty Jim, is Oates going to the second row because Xavier suggested, or just to get Bambi off the wing?
Mate, like, the thing that really killed me about that, and he played fine there, and I thought he would, but what killed me is, like, I don't know why that didn't happen if that was going to be the stopgap, why it didn't happen the week before, and why we, and everyone's talked over this now. I don't want to keep saying the same things everyone's heard the last 2 weeks, but we went in, it just feels like we went into that game at the Roosters to lose and didn't seem to really care what we put out there, and we accepted a loss before it kicked off, and it just annoyed me that we didn't seem desperate to win that game, and then this week we seemed desperate to win, and we put Oates in the back row and Offaly Garbe in the back row, and it went better. Neither of them were exceptional, but they weren't as poor as Bullmore and Hopewadi were there. But it just feels like last year, mate, that we've been through this many times. A few weeks ago when we first came back, I think fans have forgotten a lot about the bad times last year, and we won the first two games, and me and Simo got asked, are you on side with Seibold now? And I think you, Simo, the first thing you mentioned was about the positional switches all last year, like the coaching thing. And it's like, this is the same thing now. Hey, it's like every week feels like we're playing for the one game in front of us. It's like, what's the plan? So Staggs is apparently injured this week, which apparently is moving Glenn to the centres, and then Oates stays in the back row. So what happens next week then if Fifita's back? And what happens the week after if Staggs is back?
Yeah, it's just, like, we've said this before, but you never know how much to give him credit for the good decisions that happen, because I'm not sure how much he's thought it through and come to that conclusion himself, or, like, you throw enough darts at the board, you're going to hit a bullseye eventually.
That's it, mate. Like, you know, the move of Sarko is the one, one of the ones you're referring to, it was a good move. That was like, he threw a dart and it just stuck eventually. But we don't have to go over all of them again last year, but we know Milford went to fullback, Boyd went to six. We know they didn't work. Turpin played seven, and he played okay there, but he's not a seven. Fifita was on the bench forever until he got opportunity because of injury. He got stuck there. Pangai wasn't playing on the edge either. He was playing in the middle, then he got on the edge because of injury, and it worked out. Like, they just felt like by accident a lot of the time with the good ones and the bad ones, obviously not by accident, but they didn't work out. And then this year, it feels like the same kind of slapdash philosophy and things like going into a game against the Roosters and knowing you were going to play Tessie Nui at hooker, and you thought that's how you're going to win that game. Just can't get my head around that. And the same thing last week when we brought on Tessie Nui, and if you ask, I don't want either of them to play hooker, but if you ask me, if we had to have two players to play hooker, remove who they are as well. So we had two fullbacks in our team. One had played 72 minutes of fullback, one came off the bench. If you ask me who I would think would play better at hooker for the next 8 minutes, I would say the one who just came off the bench because he had some energy. But last week we threw an exhausted Isako into hooker in that period, and it looked like an under-14s game, mate. He just picked the ball up, stood and passed whoever was next to him. There was like no structure for the rest of it. Like, all this stuff, it's like, what? I don't know what the decision-making process is. And it's like, Oates is in the background now, played all right, might play well there next week, might play well the week after, but then what's long-term there? Like, if he goes back to the wing, well, what was the point of him playing back row? Especially, and then if he doesn't, he's going to turn into the bench utility, is he? Until Herbie Farmworth gets dropped or Coates gets dropped? Like, I don't get it.
Even, like, on Isako too, we've got to the right spot now, but he threw darts at everybody else. And it took one going wildly off course and jamming into Bird's knee, who then went and put it into the bullseye himself. Like, he never ever was getting to that decision. Because, yeah. And based on like 13 minutes of nines football that he didn't even see live, like, you know, he wasn't over there and he's like, yeah, Boyd's preseason form has been terrible and we're playing Bird there, who then got like caught out of position by the Capras. Like,
mate, 100% there's that. And then I've forgotten, but the way he treats that hooker position, I've forgotten about this one, but he played Katoni Staggs there last year as well in those periods for like 20 minutes, remember? It's like, I don't get it. Like, how he didn't go... I know Corey Pakes was filling in at hooker and there's an injury to Jake Turpin. How do you not just put Tom Dearden on the bench and just see how that goes? A guy who actually knows how to pass the goddamn football. Oh, well.
Yep, righto, moving on. Just because with Xavier Coates too. I don't know how he could catch the ball. Literally every single time he caught the ball that was kicked his way.
I mean, okay, we haven't got a question about that yet because that happened before that game. I will say that that's one I would have been wrong on. I didn't think he'd be ready for first grade this year. He looks like he's figured out a lot over the off-season. Like, and obviously the aerial ability was always there, but I thought he was a bit of a liability on the other side of the ball and in yardage last year. He looks to have improved a lot. That also makes me question again, if the guys who saw this all pre-season, I have no idea why he was behind Jesse Arthurs at all, or behind even Farnworth. Like, and I heard the reason he said he was behind Arthurs is because he thought Arthurs is a bit older. Okay, Mr. Experience now, okay.
Yeah, righto. Yes, again, like, he's got to that spot with Coates on the wing, and like, but his first choice was always Arthurs because he was mates with him at the Rabbitohs or wherever they were.
And he's a little older, but he wasn't really many, much more experienced. He hasn't played that much more high-level footy.
Righto, from Travis Driver, he said, hot take, they're sandbagging. I haven't figured out why yet. I don't know what sandbagging is. So
tanking, I'm guessing he's saying.
Maybe. Yeah, there's no draft, so I'm not sure why.
Not sure why either. Maybe to bring down contract values.
I mean, it doesn't work when you just re-sign everyone for 800k anyway, so...
Correct. With player options.
Yeah. Nick Shipper, what's worse than having a cricket score put on you or being held to zero at Suncorp for the first time ever?
Oh, that's a hard one.
I've literally seen opening sessions of test matches with less runs than that 49.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, we've done so well to keep that record at Suncorp intact over such a long period of time. 59-0 has to be more embarrassing, though. Like, even when we got panned... Like, even when we lost 48-18 when Wayne left, at least we scored bloody 18 points.
And, like... With how games can blow out too, I can't remember like when the points were scored at the end of that game, that's ages ago, but you could have a game end 48-18 and 10 minutes earlier it's like 36-18, like it's a lot closer, you know.
Yeah, this game was 29-0 at half time. It was like, okay.
And like, the thing is also too, you got the 58-0 in the finals, you got the 59-0 here, like anytime I have a go at someone online, I'm looking up like the Broncos' biggest score against them and be like, oh, look at Andrew John's last game against the Broncos, 50-6. Like, how good's that? You know, like, these games are here forever.
Yeah, they are. 100%, mate. It's just, it's tough to cop that kind of stuff. And as you know, before this, we've never really been a team that got thumped, even in our worst years. We didn't really get thumped like this. And it's hard to wear when you score bloody 0 points.
From Scotty Jim, he said, how much would it cost to get Phil Gould to coach?
My life.
I don't know how sad this is, but I'd give it a go.
Oh, mate. Again, I just... One of the things, like, I don't have any faith in Seibold, and from what, as you guys know, but from what I see every week, I don't think the players have any faith either, like... If you're going out there and you're putting in for that coach and you don't want to embarrass the coach or team, we don't get those losses like we do. And that's why, you know, there's definitely teams where you think that, you know, worst football teams in this competition right now who never get beaten like that because they get stuck in for their coach. And I'll tell you one thing, if Phil Gould was the coach, they wouldn't quit on him like they have quit on Siebes a few times.
Plus, even just think about it from the good PR angle. Like, if all of his agendas are there, like, working for whatever works for the Broncos...
Very true.
It'd be, and then he'd be like, I want to outdo Wayne Bennett, so we need to win 7 premierships. So he'd be coaching till he's 100. I'd take a shot at it.
We're desperate, man.
From Paul Watt, what's the best thing you saw T.O. do for the Broncos? Mitch, I know you can remember.
I don't know what I'd say the best thing is individually. I always loved when he obviously smashed blokes, but when I went and rewatched a lot of the games over the coronavirus break, I actually forgot what of a game breaker he was with the ball in hand for us. I forgot how good of a ball runner he was early on and how quick he was and how good he was both in the back row and when he'd fill in the centres. And I think we missed, and we have them now, but we missed for a while. They're having a dynamic forward like him who could change the game on both sides of the ball. And he's not going to be that player for us now. He's just going to be an experienced veteran off the bench. But when he left, I don't think we really understood the quality of player we lost. And when he went to South, I mean, he was still the same player, but he was you know, a bit more of a key player there than he was behind like Glenn and Gillette at our club. And then I think that's when a lot of Broncos fans realised the quality of player that went to South when he went there, and was, you know, pretty much the reason why they won that prelim final before the grand final.
Yeah. Amanda Long said, I've seen a few Facebook fans suggesting a straight swap Milford for Benji. Thoughts?
Facebook fans suggesting that. I mean, you've got rocks in your head. Benji's in reserve grade right now. Like Benji, I wish we kept Benji when we did, but people bitch about Milford's defence, even though it's not actually that bad and all that points go down the other side of the field. Let's see what happens if we had Benji where he is.
Jaden Edmonds, he said, footy tips. Who do you have?
Well, too late for this week's, but mate, I went right off a cliff. Like, I was going so well the first three rounds, but I've gone right off the cliff. I'll do next week's for you. God, I can't believe we're playing the Knights. it looks like we might be extending. We might go 3 years without beating them at this rate. I feel like we'd beat them with our full troops. I'll tip us in that. Rabbitohs over the Warriors. Storm over Panthers. Oh God, that's juicy. Dragons, Titans.
That's definitely one to turn Super Saturday on early four.
That is, God. I might go Titans. I don't know. These are too early. Tigers, Cowboys. Probably go the Tigers. Roosters, Eels. Roosters, Raiders, Seagulls. I want to do Seagulls. I'll say Raiders. And then, yeah, Sharks, Bulldogs. Another scrap fest. Sharks. There's my unthought out picks.
Yeah, I mean, I'd go Titans over Dragons. I think that's what you said.
Yeah, the Cowboys have a couple of injuries now. That's why I'm thinking Tigers over Cowboys. They've got McLean out and Val Holmes out. So I'm thinking Tigers in that one, yeah.
Warriors might beat Rabbitohs.
They might. They might do that. And at least, yeah, there's a team who's saying, like, it looks like they're playing for that coach at least there, huh? Look at the talent on that on paper for that team. There isn't none this year.
Sharks Bulldogs is a coin flip.
Yeah, I think the Sharks will do it. I'm not confident though.
Dale Chester said, "What's with all the MILF hate, and why isn't Boyd being dropped for the guy coming when the guy coming second in the Dally M medals has been dropped?"
I mean, the MILF hate. There is some warranted MILF hate. There is. Like, I generally default to defending him because I get sick of how far the hate goes. And there is some warranted hate there that, like, you know, even in this week's game, I thought he was really good against Manly. But and I know his role now is not to be the on-ball dominant half. That's supposed to be cross role or similar. But after this many years of being at Brisbane and being supposed to be the man or whatever, you would like to have seen him a little more involved in that last 10 minutes. And I know we want him involved. For me, I want him involved as a second receiver because that's where he's good and damaging in space. And we did get the ball at second receiver there. That's when DCA had to slap the ball out of the air. But you just like to see him, you know, demanding the ball in that position. You don't have to go on first receiver to demand the ball, but telling Croft, get me the bloody ball, or telling, you know, whoever was playing Booker, it's like, get me the bloody ball. You want to see that, and that didn't happen. And I think that's a lot of the Broncos fans' issue still, is that he doesn't step up in those moments. But the defensive stuff is as overrated as it comes. I mean, in this game, again, he put a couple of hits on against Manly. No half is a good defender. It's just, they're just not. But he's not in the bottom half of defensive halves.
No, I've never really had a problem with his defence as far as halves go. Like,
they all get run over every few weeks. It's just a fact.
Because they're half the size of the second rowers running at them. And like, whole attacking game plans are set about getting a half one-on-one with your second rower. So, they're not going to make every tackle there.
It's an indisputable fact of the last four seasons that the other edge of our team has just conceded more points than Milford's edge. Indisputable fact. That's the other edge. He's not the worst defensive half in our team. But people are stuck on the price tag too, hey. They can't get past it.
Yeah. It's been paid for. Yeah, what are you going to do? He just seems to me like Milford is just the perfect player if you have a side that's set up and works well for, like, him to be kind of the cherry on top piece.
Yeah.
Which obviously is not our team. And I don't know, some people don't like that. But if you've got a side that's solid, like, if you put him, obviously the Storm's a great side.
Yeah, and the Roosters also.
But they know how to do their job. Like, their second rows are doing their job. They're organised. and everything. And then if you have Milford could just be walk like going around there doing playing what he sees and making stuff happen, it would you'd see 2016 sort of form from him. And but our team, like, you look on Facebook for 5 minutes and you find a post bagging every single player in the side. The whole side is just a rabble. No one knows what they're doing. There's no structure. You watch them attack a set on the line and there's just absolutely nothing about from hit ups, like straight at the post for four tackles. Nobody has a clue what's happening. Croft can't put a kick in to save his life. The whole thing's just a disaster.
It is. And then he's somehow supposed to succeed in that, or other guys. Like, we know for the last 2 years we've said it's not a good team. It's individuals that are good, and good things happen. But it's so rare we score like a nice planned try or a nice planned set. Like there was a set in the end of this of the game against Manly. We got those two six agains. And, I mean, we didn't want six agains. Ridiculous. Well, obviously, we wanted penalties. But we got those two six agains. And it was like nine tackles. And it took us to the last, second last tackle that it, for that entire set. Or was it last tackle? I can't remember now. But to put a play on. The rest of the set, it was forward hit-ups. Because no, we couldn't organise a dog's breakfast. We just kept going one out. And then twice, Asaka gave the ball to Croft. And Croft threw it straight back to Lodge for a hit-up. And it's like, it was so poorly organised. We don't seem to ever be working towards the point down the field or working on anything. And then the very few rare occasions we do set for a play, like, for example, there was the kick on third tackle very early in the game. We are running that play no matter what. It's like, that grubber through was not on. Manly had covered it, and we just kicked, Croft kicked it anyway. It's like, and we never set for anything. When we do, we are doing it no matter what happens. And I know Milford, like, you want to see him play better, and we all do, and he will have good games again this year, and he probably won't lift us to another level as people want him to be. He's not that dominant half people want him to be. But as you said, if he was put in a system to succeed, like the Roosters, like at Melbourne, like at even at Manly, when he was stripped back into this is your defined role, he would be carving it up right now. And I think that's going to be the hard thing. If he ever gets kicked out of Brisbane, he'll most likely succeed elsewhere. You know, and probably helps he would be uncomfortable off the field elsewhere and not in his natural environment. But I feel like, you know, if that ever happens, he'll probably do well elsewhere and people will just hate him even more then.
Yeah, most likely. Just on to, like, with you see how our sets are structured and stuff, but then you go back and look from when Kronk was at the Roosters and then the Storm also. Like, you'd see they'd get a penalty, right, and they're going to kick for touch. But, like, before they even kicked for touch and started that set, he's, like, every player on that team in that Roosters side would know what play is going to happen one after the other, where they're aiming for on the field, and what play they're going to run after that. And, I mean, I've not seen it happen, but I'm sure also if, like, the defense adapted and slid numbers to the side they were going to run, they'd play something different. Like, they wouldn't just run that same play still. Well, yeah, and that's the polar opposite of our side, obviously, because you've got Kronk.
Yeah, the good Roosters of the last 2 years, mate, you watched them, and they were very structured, but they moved so fast that people didn't think they were structured. But what you just said there was 100% right. There was options both sides of the ball almost always, and they made good decisions. Our team was like, we are stuck in the middle of the field. We don't know where to go but up the middle, and it works sometimes when you want to go through the to and fro, but it just at the end of when we're trying to chase points, it's terrible. Like, we don't know how to stretch teams. Don't know how to work to one side and then get quick ball movement out to the other side. The ball movement is so bad. We can't get the ball across the field, hey, like, at all. We can't go from one side to the other without stagnating.
Yeah, but, like, with the side we've got too, when you've got everyone fit, Lodge, Haas, Fifita, Pangai, like, you'll have games where you steamroll the other team and you win based on just the forward pack. Like, it's obviously a good forward pack when everyone's there.
Yeah, 100%. And we will have those games, but that's just why this, like, I still won't rate this team when it comes to business end of the season, because, like, when there's plan A of, like, running over them doesn't work, there is no plan B.
Nah. Righto. Vince Berlingeri. I'm sick of Seabold's excuses. It seems the only things he studies all week to prep for a game is to think about what smart stats he can come up with for the press conference after the games. Effing bullshit, if you ask me.
Oh, they're embarrassing, hey. Like, there was the Sydney Roosters press conference when he turned up with all those numbers, excuses of losing, and then we found out that somebody senior at the Broncos, Ben Eichen didn't name him, but somebody texted the experience numbers around to all parts of the media as excuses. Like, that's just pathetic, having that ready to lose that game. I mean, there was a really good article, by the way, my friend Nick Camden wrote it last week about the demise of the Broncos, or coaching the Broncos right now, on Daily Telegraph, Campo's Corner. I suggest Broncos fans give that one a good read, because it nails a lot of things me and Campo have spoken about together, and it's me and Sim have spoken about on this podcast as well, but in a far more eloquent way and from a neutral's perspective. And I think that's a good read and covers a lot of these things of what the club's become now.
Yeah, I thought it was really well written, easy to read, and just, nailed just about every point.
Yeah, irrelevant to that, but he actually DM'd me after that, and he brought up one thing, and he said, we're speaking about recruitment and how we slum it up, and we've said this before on this podcast again, but how we talk about how we could be doing what the Roosters do, but instead we just don't because we've got terrible retention, we retain everybody. But he brought up Brodie Croft signing, and he just said, the Broncos slummed it because they didn't have to, like, we're better than that. With Brisbane, but he said Crofts is a good case to examine of how the Broncos and their surrounds have totally fucked themselves. One, they sign Croft. Two, he gets the media hype because he's a Queenslander, and the stupid Cronk comparisons are easy, and they can bring out the he's a new Langer bullshit. Three, they make him captain to empower him. Four, they ask him to do a job that they know he cannot do, and they should know he cannot do. Five, he fails because of course he does. And six, they're four games into the Brodie Croft era and it's already over. And seven, it was a perfect combination of hype, stupidity, and the Broncos thinking they'll get it right just because they're the Broncos. But at some point, they thought they made smart decisions because they were the Broncos, not that the Broncos were what they were because they made smart decisions.
That's exactly it. That bit there. And this is what I've always said too. Like, people have always gone, oh, we should get a second side in Brisbane to help even the Broncos out, And like I've always said, it doesn't matter. You could have 1,000 rugby league sides in Brisbane, and if the Broncos had have kept making smart decisions like they did at the start, it wouldn't matter how many sides are. The smart sides are going to be great no matter what.
The Roosters.
Yeah, there's 8 other rugby league sides in Sydney, and the Roosters are still the Roosters because they make smart decisions. Like, GWS got put in Sydney in the AFL, and the Swans were still great for years and years and years because they were making smart decisions. It doesn't matter what sides are around. It matters you make the club as good as the Broncos were based on the decisions that club makes.
That's it, mate. Like, 100%. And that's where I think the club got lost in there at some point around that. Like, what came first? The Broncos or the good decisions? It was the good decisions that came first. And I thought that nailed it. And, Brodie Croft was just... And we've been against that signing since day one, and fans are coming around now too. And it's not even because I dislike him as a player, which I did anyway, but I totally dislike what we bought him to do because it doesn't suit his skill set at all. He's clearly not a leader. He's clearly not a game manager. His kicking game is garbage. And, it's just, he can run the ball okay-ish. That's about it. And then we just stuck to it. We're going to keep doing it for ages. And he's a co-captain, and I don't get this either. We've got two co-captains we threw to the Wolves, but Matt Lodge is the one fronting the press conferences and the one talking during the week. Like, did we just make him the captain without saying it and didn't have the balls to make it public? Like, is that was that what happened?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, we've gone over this before too, but this is why, another reason why I would have loved for, say, the last year of Wayne Bennett and then Jason Demetra after that and Wayne Bennett, staying around the club, because I think if he had a position at the club, I think he would help them make a lot of smarter decisions than they're making now.
Yeah. And I mean, the halfback stuff's been embarrassing for our club for a long time now. Like, me and you both know, as well as other Broncos fans do, is that even in our youth, post Alfie and Kevy, we haven't found a way to develop another half or even sign one with all our pulling power. Like, we had Scott Prince and he broke his leg, we let him go. Then we used Brett Seymour alongside Lockyer. Didn't like that. We brought in Peter Wallace and he was okay, but he wasn't what we thought he was going to be after a while, and we got rid of him. And Lockie moved on, so we had Corey Norman, and that wasn't great. And then we tried Joel Moon a bit earlier, but he played centre. That wasn't great. We brought back Scott Prince. That didn't go very well. We eventually used Ben Hunt, and it worked for a couple of years. And what a surprise. When we had a decent halfback, the team made a grand final, and then we let Ash Taylor go, and then Ben Hunt left. So we tried Cody Nicaremo, and that didn't really work. And then, when we try the next year after that, we'll let Cody go, and we'll try this kid who got injured, and then we'll try Turpin there. Well, that didn't really work. And then, let's try another kid the next year. Well, that hasn't worked, so next year let's try another kid. Yay.
I'm sure it'll work eventually.
Yeah, meanwhile, we see George Williams go to the Raiders and kill it from day dot. And I know he was somewhat keen on coming here 2 years ago. So what?
Yeah, I remember talking about that a bit back when Wayne was coaching England.
Yeah.
Righto, Scott Fellows. Who do you think will be the first team we beat after the restart?
If Staggs was in and Glenn was in the back row and Pangai's back this week, I thought we could have done the Knights this week. But I'm really, like, that combination of Boyd and Glenn in the centres, like, put a bullet in my mouth. Like, I know they worry about defensive, you know, shutting down Bradman Best or similar, but, like, the game is won by scoring goddamn points. And our defence is bad. It's going to stay bad. Like, can we at least try and outscore someone? At least go that way? So, I don't know if it's...
Titans is after them, then Warriors, then Bulldogs, then Tigers. So,
mate, thank God for those four games after that. Because we should have Fifita back like around 8 or 9 as well, which is good.
Yeah, we'll probably lose to the Titans because that seems like something we'll do.
Yeah, it does actually.
Yeah, but we'll get someone in there. Probably the Tigers on like a controversial last minute penalty. Lastly on Facebook from Sean Radloff. When a team gets a 7-tackle set, the defending team just gives a ruck infringement penalty on play 1 to slow it down, which gives away a 6 again. Panthers did it about 6 times in the same game. Thoughts on the rule change or just scrap a 7-tackle? Broncos obviously a bit slow on the uptake with rule changes.
I think the rule change is trash. Like, I really haven't... It looked really good. The first game it happened against us, and that first set it happened in, Parramatta rolled down the field in, you know, 7 or 8 tackles, and then Niokore scored. And everyone was like, wow, look at this rule. Look at this. What a rule. And then that happened. And then it's been pretty shit since, if you ask me. Like, a lot of the time, the team that receives a 6 again doesn't receive the genuine benefit. As you said, they happen on tackle 1 very often. For us, in the last game, it happened on tackle 1 and tackle 2, I think, down our own end, trying to chase the game. We didn't get penalties. You know, and then, you know, other instances, you'll see a team will get one and drop the ball on that tackle, and that's it. And that's happened quite a few times. It's like, it's a punishment to the team with the ball very often. Because even the teams with the ball want the break sometimes. They want to kick the ball down the field and set something up. They want that advantage. They don't care about rolling fast when it's received pretty much anywhere outside the opposition 30. They don't care.
Honestly, like, the only way I would have this rule is if anywhere in the field it's a penalty, but if you're attacking on the line, like in that 20 metres,
yeah,
they call 6 again, but then if the attacking team just stop straight away, they can take the penalty if they want.
Yeah, look, I wouldn't even hate the rule, mate, if that was the choice. If the right now, if they call 6 again and the captain goes, well, stop. I wouldn't even hate it then if the captain's like, no, we want the penalty.
Because, like, you would know if you wanting to, like, the team's wanting to take a kick on goal, like, depending on game situation or whatever. So the person with the ball, like, don't even play the ball. Just stand there and they're like, no, we'll take a penalty. Like, captain, yell out just something and...
But
I don't think the ref should be making decisions like that, like just based on the feel, like, oh, maybe we'll do this or we'll do that, just why not, like.
And it still leads to putting the whistle away, and even other calls, like there's still controversial calls, that was a dumb thing, like that was going to go away, like the Paddy Carrigan call was wrong from this week's game, you know, and it was wrong, and we got penalised and we lost, and then we got received 2-6 against right after it, and it's just like, well, brilliant, this is really consistent, and what people want, their bloody consistency. It's like this is garbage, and like, what team ever chasing a game 5 minutes left in their own half ever wants 6 again? They're gassed as well. They want the field position. The 6 again only works in the first like 10 minutes of both halves for the attacking team when they've got energy. That's like it.
Yeah. Righto, moving over on Twitter now from Thursday Night FB. Who would you shape out the future? How would you shape the future of our halves? I'd like to punt the current 2 and look into Dearden, but who would you partner with him?
I mean, Milford's there for at least this year and next. You know, that's the Connick situation. After that, who would I partner with him? I don't really even know, mate, because, like, there's not that many halves I have my eye on right now that are of a reasonable age. I think we signed them in 2022. Like, you know, maybe if we have to get rid of Milford, you know, maybe I'm chasing a Luke Keary at that point. But I'm more concerned. I think we have most of the cattle, minus, you know, a halfback or one or two other pieces. My concern is the coach. Like, we've seen this countless times with teams the last couple of years, how, like, Manly with the same roster went from 15th to the finals till this year. And you know, you saw even the Sharks, you know, lose Flano and they go to where they are now. It's the coach makes a big difference in rugby league. It doesn't make a huge difference in all sports, but it does in this game.
Yeah, I mean, look at the Knights. They just look like a completely different side.
You're right. That's it. And like, Kurt Mann had a good game on the weekend at 6.
Yeah.
You know this, yeah.
Jared underscore S. Any stress tips to get me through a Broncos game?
No.
Just drink a lot is no. My usual go-to.
Yeah, I've got no anti-stress tips there, mate. Like, I try to go in some of these games, you know, thinking we're going to lose, try not to care, try not to let it hurt, and it still does, mate.
Pythago NRL, how many more former Broncos do we need to give an opinion on how the club has lost its way before the club finds its way again?
This is kind of like why I haven't really come on here to go over all the things we've spoken about this club in the past, because the media are finally doing it now too, about like Paul White, about Isaac Moses, about Peter Nolan and all that kind of stuff, how we got to this spot. But man, it's like every single former Bronco is just like coming out of anywhere and saying this club isn't what it was. It's like, yeah, we kind of know that.
Yeah, really? Because we're not winning premierships, so that's a bit of a giveaway. Also from Pythago NRL, is the Dolphins leaving us for the Warriors some end of days type stuff, or is that an overreaction?
Overreaction, but it's another symptom of the poor management of the Brisbane Broncos right now to lose. I know Ipswich went for similar, like differentish reasons, but to lose Ipswich and Redcliffe as feeders over the last 2 years, it's just another symptom of that. Like Redcliffe had been a feeder for us since 2006, and they used to hold our pocket, man. Like they used to take whoever we wanted, play them when we told them to play them, and work on who we wanted. They were the team that took Matt Lodge. They worked on Hopewadi after prison. Even though Hopewadi wasn't really Broncos contracted, they work on Hopper there. You know, they would play guys we told them to play. And not every coach in reserve grade wants to do that. And I thought the start of this year when they moved Corey Pakes and to South Logan and Tom Dearden to South Logan, I thought that was weird because Pakes was at Redcliffe last year. But it's obvious they'd lost that linkage now. And it's not like we've lost a massive breeding ground, because you know we all know how this works kind of now. Pretty much you sign for being a Bronco when you're like 16. It's not like we're getting many people out of Redcliffe, but it's just another symptom to me, like that the club is asleep at the wheel a bit, admin, and a bit arrogant. Like we're down to, what have we got? We let the Warriors in and the Newcastle into Queensland. Like what are you doing? Like it's not even about having that link for us. A lot of it's about having the link so nobody else does, you know?
Yeah. From Scotty Howe, how can you two be so courageous as to record at a time like this after two one-sided losses like that? This was before the Manly game too, so it's three losses now.
Yeah, but this last one wasn't one-sided. It was so brave. So brave. It was a Titans loss, mate. We were so brave. We tried so hard.
Really put in the effort.
Mate, it's not easy, but I remember many years ago, Simo, maybe our second year of podcasting and more other fan podcasts started up. And I remember me and you talking, and I'll name them, but Panthers Weekly were starting to not record when they were losing. And me and you were like, we can't do that.
Nah. So we can't go back just because of what we said to each other about that.
Yeah, that's it, mate. And I know like it was easy to say it from where at that point we were globetrotting. Broncos were never going to be bad again at that point. So it was easy to say that. But here we are. We front up. And it's kind of like Broncos therapy, because I actually, like, there's probably too many takes on Twitter or in my DMs about it right now. But it's like, you know, it's good for me. Come on, you chat, Simo, chat some shit. It's all right.
Yeah, I usually feel better about Broncos. I mean, the games were a bit ago, so I was feeling a bit better anyway, but
yeah,
you always feel a bit better after having a chat. From Haas of Pain, first time ever I'm not supporting us. I want Boyd to let in a shitload of tries and bomb two tries over the line. Hashtag drop Darius.
I mean, that's another one. Like, as all the things you can try and get behind Seabob with, I don't know how you can explain that continued selection and how anyone can defend it. And the only thing I see people trying to claim is, oh, there must be someone stopping him from dropping him.
In the end, I don't care about that anymore. Like, no. I got behind that last year because after the 58-0, he said everything was going to change. And I was like, okay, maybe if he got told to do that for a year, I could buy that. But it's still here now. And at this point, I don't care. If he isn't strong enough to stand up and be like, no, I'm dropping Darius and I'm playing my best 17. Like, I don't want him as the coach.
Yeah, what are we doing here at that point? Yeah, I mean, I just don't know what people have to, like, what evidence people have to see to get off Seabold. People seem to start talking themselves back into him up, like, the day after every loss. It's like, he's literally the worst coach we've ever had. Like, any numbers wise. I know numbers aren't everything, but like he's in numbers for you, points scored and points conceded. He's the worst we've ever had. Like that's just it. Like they're not talking any basic fancy stats, but you know, remember the you know, you think of the dark Anthony Griffin and Henjack days, it's like this Seabold team averages 16 points scored a game. It's embarrassing. It's like even Griffin's boring team averaged 21 points scored a game.
Yeah, just they were all in the first 60 minutes.
That's it. But it's it. He's yeah. He's just. I can go off. I'll read through them. Screw it. I've got some numbers I did last week. But he's like the only Broncos coach to never put 40 on a team ever. The only Broncos coach only score over 30 once in a season. The next lowest I think was 4 times in a season. The 56 points through our first 4 rounds was our least we scored in a season since 99, and the third least overall. 132 points conceded through 4 rounds was the most we've conceded in 4 rounds. Obviously, it makes our worst points differential through 4 rounds ever. And then over any Broncos coaching tenure, so he averages 16.8 points scored and 23.4 conceded for an average margin of negative 6.6. And now over Wayne Bennett's whole career at Brisbane, he averaged 23.6 scored and 16.9 conceded, average margin of 6.8. So it's already over a 13-point swing between all of Wayne Bennett, but even between Wayne Bennett V2, he still averaged 23 points scored and 18 conceded. And it's still a 13-point swing from average scoring 5. To, you know, it's just huge. He's the worst coach by a distance. Like, Henjak's defense is almost as bad, but Henjak's attack was the second best of any Broncos coach.
Henjak had Lockyer, which
he
helped.
Did. He did, but like, I don't know. It definitely helped. Henjak was a bad coach. Like, but I just think Seabold's worse. He has a good talented roster too.
What I would give right now for Henjak to just swing by work on the way and pick up a few cartons and drop off at Broncos and be the coach. Just don't even have to coach. Like, pick a half-decent 17 and like the side could sort itself out better than Seabold's doing right now.
Like that Henjak team, it was a bit of a flawed roster. Like he had Lockyer, which is true, but that was also the time we had about 17 back rowers and no front rowers. Like it was a pretty, you know, he did miss the finals and he got punted because of that. And also that the young backs weren't very good. We had Folau, which is true, but it was like the back line had, you know, Jared Beale in and out of it, Winterstein, Corey Norman, Denon Kemp's like last year at Brisbane. Dale Copley played a bit of Yao Yee before, you know, Yao Yee was Yao Yee. Hoffman, like it wasn't a very talented side. Like the front rowers were like Scott Anderson, Mitchell Dodds, Nick Kenny. Not great. Like we this team like, is much better. Is a more talented team. Bar Lockyer is a more talented team than that team was.
We had like one decent middle the whole decade after 2006 on.
That's it, mate. And now this team, like, we've finally got middles, but it's, you know, Seabold is doing a good job to mess all that up. Like, you know, he does keep playing. He plays Haas in the right spot, which is nice, but I'm just sick of the shuffle almost every week and the chaos every week. Like, I don't know how anyone can get behind that, can get behind every week the guys lining up in different positions.
Yeah, I'm half worried that he's going to kill Haas by the time he's 22.
Yeah, I mean, it's great Haas can play 80 minutes. It's fantastic. But it's like he shouldn't be doing it every week.
No. Righto. Yeah. Benny DTD, serious question, rare I know, but where do we start from again? Obviously, the board needs to go. It has been responsible for a dreadful 5 years, really. Which coach should we legitimately go after? Also, we need experience. Who would be your top 3 targets?
Yeah, and I think this is part of what we spoke about this. I mean, we did the, you know, the Paul White podcast when Wayne got punted, and it's obviously not just Seabold's fault where we are right now. And I don't want it to get lost there. I think he's a bad coach regardless. But it goes all the way up to the board, as you said. And I think, you know, if the clubs are turning around, Paul White has to go, and I think he's going into this year, unless they get that extension based on coronavirus out of him they offered him. Carl Morris, chair of the board, he took over chair at 2018. That's like directly in line with the massive plummet since then. And then you've got Peter Nolan in recruitment, who's, you know, buddy-buddy with Isaac Moses. And we have some good players because of that, but I mean, you don't want any player agent having 15 players in your first grade squad, let alone Isaac Moses. It's not good. But it starts at the top. I don't know the CEO answer, because why would any fan know who the next best Broncos CEO is going to be? It's just not my job to find that, unfortunately. But that's where it starts. Head coach is a tough one too, mate. Like CEO, I wouldn't, you know, if I had to throw a candidate out, I knew I'd thrown out Shane Richardson, knowing that he's done it well at clubs for the last 20 years, and you know, I trust him to do well at Brisbane as well, and he's a Brisbane boy in the first place. Coach is tough. The coach I liked last year, Adam O'Brien, he's got a job. So I don't know. Like I like I don't mind Sean Wayne from England, but you've got to be able to handle the pressure of being a Broncos coach. And Bellamy isn't coming anytime soon either, so I don't actually know the coaching answer. Have you got any candidates, Simo?
Yeah, well, I mean, Jason Demetriou was always the one I liked, but he's got a job also.
That's it.
I mean, this might be part of the reason why I'm not CEO of any clubs, but my mind is always that coaches make the biggest difference in any sporting team. Like, I think even in probably sports that they don't matter as much, but like, NFL is probably one of the ones that it matters more than most. Well, it is, well, yeah. But I just always think the coach makes the biggest difference. And when there's not a salary cap on coaching, just go to the person you like the most. I don't care what club they're at. But if you're the Broncos, just be like, we'll give you double what you're getting now. Come coach the best side in the comp and we'll make it great again. Yeah. We'll get like maroon hats that say make Broncos great again. It'll be great.
Well, there is a coaching cap now, but no one's spending it. And we won't, like, no one else, we're getting, apparently we're closest to it, and no one else is even near it. So there is obviously money to go chase somebody. And he said, Dimitri, who I liked as well, but obviously he's got a job lined up. And I think Bellamy's a pipe dream. I think, like, he's one that people will hate me saying, but I'd take Shane Flanagan. I don't care he's a cheat. I want to win games.
I'd definitely take Shane Flanagan.
He's a proven winner at that Sharks team. I'd definitely take him.
Plus, I only care if he cheats at other clubs. I don't care if he cheats at my club.
And that's it. Everyone wants to win games. Like, people talk about how Flanagan's a douche. It's like, come on, we got players we didn't like before we signed them, and if we won, we'd like Flano. It's that simple.
Hey, I got behind Josh Maguire for years, so I can get behind Flanagan. So that's, you know.
In terms of any of the players, question he asked.
No, there's nothing on players there. It's
experience, didn't he say? Three players or something.
Oh, we need experience. Who would be top three targets? I wasn't sure if that was referring to coaching, but yeah. For players.
If it's players, I'd love a back a lock like Dale Finucane. I'm not in love with Paddy Carrigan like everyone else is. Like, I get he's a good ball carrier, but his defense is average, and we're trying to force something onto him by making him play slow, and he makes poor decisions that way. I'd love a forward leader like a Dale Finucane or a Tohu Harris, even though he's not a lock, but you could go to lock, something like that. That. I don't know. The big recruit I think we'll regret, and I already do regret that we didn't chase, is Harry Grant. Like, we're going to be the club that like watched the Storm have Cam Smith be the Origin hooker for like over a decade, and then the Storm are going to have the Queensland Origin hooker again for over a decade with Harry Grant, and we missed out, and we didn't even chase him at any point. That's who I want. We should have chased him hard. I don't care how much you like Jake Turpin.
Yeah, I mean, time's a flat circle. Just goes round and round and round.
It does.
On a semi-related question here from Thursday Night FB, he's got F, Mary Kill, Seabold, Nolan, White.
Oh, God.
Well, I'll start. I'm going to kill Seabold.
Mm-hmm.
And which means I'm probably going to marry Nolan, and White probably sort himself out soon enough.
That's what I think it is too. As I think you can F White, he's leaving anyway. I think you got it right. And Nolan, whilst he's the recruitment guy and he has power and control, he is the least influential of that bunch. You know, coaches can overrule him, and Paul White can overrule him as well.
From Jack K. Cronin, he said, "Hey lads, long time follower, first time listener. Do you have any hopes for success under Seabold, or do you think the easy way out culture has already gone too far that it will take a change for genuine success despite the roster a la Knights with Brown and Adam O'Brien?"
Mate, I agree with that easy way out team. Like, this team takes any excuse it's given, and they've generally got the excuses prepared a lot of the weeks, and they will perform after a smashing sometimes because everyone else externally has got up them, but no one internally seems to be up their ass. Like, we think we're some next level. We all know this. We think we're some next level team with next level thinkers with a game of all of that garbage. But like, at the most basic level, like, rugby league is a game of aggression. And you can see last week when we came against the Roosters, it's like, we all knew we were going to lose that game. But the fact that nobody even seemed to come out angry or fired up or anything, that really is like, man, what did they do this week? Like, they just accepted they were going to lose. I think it is one of those cultural things, mate, that it's just like, until he goes, that won't change. And we'll win some games with that. When the team's fully fit, that roster is too good to not win games. That pack is too good. They'll win games, but I think it's in spite of him, not due to his coaching. And it'll happily be proven wrong, but I just don't think it will be over the long run.
I think a symptom, too, of this easy way out culture is, you've mentioned this too, but like, it's always the player's decision whether they go or stay at this club. Like,
yes.
They, despite the fact that all of them have player options, like, even when their contracts are up, if they want to stay at the club, they'll get a contract offer and stay at the club. Like, who's the last person we told to get lost? I don't know. I mean, there's probably been someone. But
I mean, we have obviously got rid of some players over the last year or two, but all of them were still contracted. Who was you mean like the last player we said go test the market? We never. Like, when did we do that? Ever? Like, not even just the current. Like, we have so many player options, right? But the current ones, even like, you can like Jack Turpin as much as you want, but the fact he got a 2-year player option is hilarious after last year. He has this year signed up, and then he has a 2-year player option. A player of that caliber getting a player option is hilarious. Player options only exist in those edge cases when, say, like, the Broncos go and sign, you know, maybe they go and try and sign a Ponga. And they go, you know what, mate? We'll give you 3 years. And he goes, you know what? I want 2 and a player option. That's when you go, yep, done. To get someone like that. You don't sign half your current roster on player options. It should be Broncos options. Performance-based industry. The team has the option, not the player. That's how it should work. But everyone on this team, anytime they're off contract, it seems, they get offered bulk years. And then it locks your cap down to not have flexibility to chase guys who could become available. All good players become available. We seem to be chasing our tail with the cap the last 2-3 seasons now. We have half the squad penned up for a long distance. And I know it seems nice, like, oh, we've got, you know, Fafita and well, he's not penned yet. We've got Haas penned, and we've got Staggs penned, we've got Asako penned, whatever. But it's like, we did it for all these guys who were like 28, 29 as well, and we'll keep doing that.
Yeah, I don't even know if I would have offered Ponga a player option. Obviously, hindsight's 2020, and you would looking back, but at the time...
I'm saying, as in, if it was right now.
Oh, if it was right now. Yeah. Sorry, I thought you were meaning at the time we tried to get him. Like, yeah, if it was right now, yeah, sure. Greg Inglis, when we tried to chase him when he was leaving the Storm, that's the person you want to give a player option. If it was Greg Inglis, I'd give him 5 years of player options. I wouldn't care.
That's it, mate. But what you got
to
do.
You're not giving, like, a player option to, I don't know, your 17th person on the roster.
Well, current roster player options, Jack Bird, Darius Boyd, Matt Lodge, Anthony Milford, Corey Oates, and Jake Turpin. That's 7 of the 30. But you know how it's blown up in their faces. They tried to put pressure on Anthony Milford. They literally tried to do that this season, and he goes, oh, okay, thanks. I'll take my option. Okay. And then Kahu came back as well. And even when they let McCulloch go, he has a player option for next year. So even though he's gone, he could still somehow come back. I doubt he will. So it's those guys that have options. And then, we've got Joe O, we signed to 2022. I don't know why. Carrigan's on 2022 already. Croft, 2022. Like, it's just not flexible. It's garbage.
Hello, James K _ 1312. Gutless wonders the lot of them. I don't think I've ever hated a Broncos side as much as I hate this one in the last couple of seasons. As soon as the going gets somewhat tough, they just roll over and let the floodgates open. I don't like calling for coaches to be sacked so soon, but if this continues, we will have to change things up. Who is a realistic option to replace him, though?
I mean, I know you want to say you don't want to call for it too soon. It's not too soon after some of those hammerings we got. Like, when is too soon? It's like, oh, yeah, 3 years, we sack him now after damage is done. It's like, it's... the end of this year would be probably where they might... If you miss the finals this year, there might actually be a judgment call on him, especially if a new CEO comes in. And if his performance part of his contract is real, that they've stated, but like, I don't like that. The too soon garbage is like, how much of an opportunity do you need? Like, nobody waits for a player to fuck up for 2 years straight.
No, for me, like, after last year, it would have been too soon.
Mm.
And even after the 58-0, like, as bad as that was, you like, see what changes he makes. And then when you're 4 weeks into the season and you get done 59-0, it's not too soon anymore.
It's not. And Darius Boyd's still on the side. And then the excuse is the youth, except the guy, the oldest guy on the team with the most experience is probably the most embarrassing. It's always great.
Real _ Mr. Ives. How long before Corey Oates is blowing balloons in his second row stint?
He was all right, eh? Like, fitness-wise, too. I was shocked by that. I thought he'd have fitness issues, but...
Yeah, I thought he did pretty good. I mean, could have run a slightly better line on that Darius Boyd's second try, but it also should have been Rule of Try, so whatever.
I mean, that I think that was a fine line, hey? Like,
yeah, I think it was fine, but like, it's also one of those things where if you run a slightly different line, you don't let the referee make that decision. Yeah. Like, you run a line that they can't make that decision.
I mean, you know, this is a safe space, and welcome other Broncos, other teams, fans listening, but that was the first time in a long time I felt actually aggrieved by the refereeing. You know, I obviously expected to lose before the game, so it didn't sting as much as it would if it was a different game, but it was like that call, and then obviously the call on Brody Croft as a defensive decision where he just got murdered, and then the Paddy Carrigan simultaneous, and then they missed the... Cherry Evans missed the field goal, nobody touched it. So that's great. And then the 2-6 again. And then we found out later, I don't know if other Broncos fans know yet, but Danny Levi got cited I can't remember what charge he got, but it was 74th minute in front of their goalpost. He got cited for something. We didn't get that penalty. It's like, it's just one of those games that I did feel like we were grieved. Even in that last set when Lodge slapped Danny Levi's arm, he was square.
Yeah.
So it was just one of those games.
Danny Levi also was like, slower than an afternoon at the in-laws getting out of half there too.
Yeah, no. God, he was bad in that game, Danny Levi as well. I mean, Tony Stagg's penalty in this game though was near the dumbest I've ever seen. It was Jordan Carhu levels of stupid.
No, I only think dumber than that was challenging it.
The Coates one with the challenge, yeah. The Stagg's is that one where he was never square. He just dove on the ball.
Righto, Jared _ S. Can we improve our consistency, see like Seabold wanted, and lose 60-0 this week? Maureen Doyle, 52, your mum.
G'day, mum.
How dumb were they to sign a junior coach for 5 years? What would it take to get an investigation into the running of the Broncos head office? Well, yeah, we need to sign Jeff Toovey. That's what we need.
That's it. Yeah, I think it's the pressure's finally coming. But me and you've been saying this since 2 years ago. It were anti the Wayne thing and how they moved on. And again, it was not that we were Team Wayne. We were Team Wayne and then Demetriou and what was going. Because what was going was, I know we had that bad year and I know we lost 48-18, but we still beat all the top four that year. We still had good wins. Like, we were one win but out of the top four as well. But like, I was on board with that transition. I had belief in the club and in the team. And it's like, it felt aggrieved to then do that and move to another rookie coach. And then everything seems to be the excuse of being rookies. The losses on the field and the coaching cop-out. But it's like, guys like Paul White have been in the club for a decade. We haven't won shit. And no pressure being applied to him like at all until this week. He was still getting called. Like, people were throwing his name off the NRL CEO like 3 weeks ago. Ridiculous. Yeah.
Would you take Jeff Toovey as a coach?
No. Like, oh man, he's one of those guys. He's like Kevy. Whenever I actually hear him talk about the game and about players, I'm always like, how the hell did you ever coach anything? You know, like, whenever I hear him, how did you coach anything? I don't know.
Yeah, I'd still take him. Like,
angry.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Like, as you said, when this side's fit, it's a good side. So you just need someone to psych him up. And Kevy could do that. It's not Kevy. New South Wales Kevy could do that.
I'm trying to think, where was it? Was it Tuvi's team of the year or similar last year, or these Origin team? And I saw that, and I'm like, ah, yeah, this is why you're not coaching. Which one it was.
It's desperate times, all right? I'd take a lot of people right now. Yeah. from Danger _ Anger, is Katoni just Shitasaki 2.0?
His defense is terrible. Like, and his decision making is terrible, but no, he's got way more upside in attack. I'm hoping he will learn. Really hoping he will learn. But it's there's a lot more holes in his game than people like to admit.
Mr. _ S888, please have a special guest segment of King Wally abusing the Broncos organization. King Wally says, if you're in a room with Seabold and Paul White and you had a gun with a single bullet, what are you doing?
Myself.
Ben Roki replies, line them up and hope for a 2-for-1. Mr. _ S888, F. Mary Kill, Greg Eden, Lachlan Maranto, 2020, Darius Boyd.
Greg Eden, Lachlan Maranto.
Well,
Akil Darbs.
I was going to say, he's the easy one to F because he just lays down so easy.
Yeah, but I kill him and like, Oh, it's actually hard between him and Eden. Maranta was not as bad as Darius is right now. When Maranta had that 1 year when he was okay under bombs.
Yeah, I'm marrying Maranta, my longtime love.
Yeah.
Greg Eden. Yeah, I'm killing Darius Boyd.
Yeah. I remember the team now. I just Googled it from Jeff Tuvey. It was his all-time Seagulls team, but it didn't have like anyone from the last like 20 years in it. That's what it was. Even the team he coached, the team that was like really good for that whole 10 years, not one of them made it. And there's a lot of average players in it too.
Yeah, I mean, whereas my team would be the opposite. It would just be all players from the last 10 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Andrew RLP, Andrew Ferguson.
Random one.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a few this week. Jack, yeah, there's been a couple. Mm. Have the cardboard cutouts burnt their jumpers on demands of refunds? Yes.
They should be.
King Wally 1, F Paul White, F the entire Broncos board, F Anthony Seibold. If we sack Seibold soon, what are our realistic coaching options? Please don't say Kevin Walters. Been through that.
No.
From Buduinya.
Oh, no.
Who is your least favourite Roosters supporter?
Mate, that Big O trivia bloke.
That's an easy cop out.
What, you want me to name what one of my friends who are
Roosters fans? Yeah, yes.
They take probably it too personally, mate.
Yeah, that's why you asked the question.
If it was another fan base, I'd name it. But the Roosters boys, mate, they'll be talking about it for 2 years.
You get subtweets. Probably just Jake. GM Walker. Corey Oates to a brand new position on 4 days of practice, defending next to Boyd, Milford and Coates. What could go wrong? Can this be viewed as anything but desperation move by a coach who's got no plan on the field and no leadership skills?
Well, I agree with all those things in terms of desperation move and no plan on the field and no leadership either. Like, God, even that quote this week that came out that he asked the players to hold each other accountable. Like, are you kidding me, bro? Next one.
Marshall 23 _. Instead of talking about a new Brisbane club, should we be talking about two new Brisbane clubs?
Why not?
This person might be my least favourite Roosters fan now.
There you go.
Liam Patrick 1993. Will Seibold last the season as coach? Although at this point clubs dump enough to keep him around. Oh, I guess he'd get a job somewhere else. I reckon at this point he is worse than Henjak and Griffin. I'm murdering this. At this point, he's worse than Henjak and makes Griffin look like a premiership winning coach in comparison.
I'd take Griffin back, mate. I'm telling you, like that team blew some losses, but they were never this embarrassing. Like, I got very frustrated in that team not reaching their potential under him and blowing leads. But there wasn't many weeks that they went out there and got absolutely blown off the park. Most of the times, if they conceded over 30 points, it was in a game where they lost like 26-32. Where they lost because Corey Parker missed 7 goals or something.
Yeah. M1, line 1. Should they have chased Maloney when he came off contract to give our young team some experienced leadership and direction?
No, I don't think Maloney is the one you want in terms of leadership. He's a dickhead off the field, and there's a reason why he's not lasted anywhere. And I think he was just ready for that move to France.
Yeah, I would have liked him when he went to Penrith.
Yes, that was the right timing, but I don't think the timing is right now. I think we're at that really awkward window now. Like, a lot of great halfbacks have just retired, and people ask me who I want to sign. There's not really that many experienced halves I actually want. That's what's tough as well.
It's not even the great ones. There's not really any solid good ones either.
There isn't. I was talking to Campo yesterday, mate, and I said, how far away is he from calling George Williams the best halfback in the world already? Because it's not like there's that many in front of him.
No. Yeah. Nathan Chip 22. If the Broncos win this week, end of year party at Sizzler. DW Kingston. The Roosters score fewer points with Teddy. Cameron Anker. What player/players would you sign to help the current crop? Do we need experienced players or a better coach?
Better coach. I mean, it's exciting another experienced person now. As much as I want an experienced forward, they're probably not going to do that. as sad as it is, but I, you know, if you're ever going to make a splash, it'd be somehow landing a talented fullback, even though I like a Sarko there or a hooker. I know Turpin's been fine, but that's what I'd be going for. Like a hooker or a halfback. I don't know what halfback I could sign, but like I said, I would love Harry Grant at number nine. Like the team having some direction somewhere is a thing they desperately need, and I don't really know if like other experienced players are going to resolve that. If you get me, like, you know, even though I want an experienced forward leader, I don't think throwing in a different number 13 is going to change the fortunes completely.
D. Darrinson, who will be the next scapegoat after Arthur's took his fall this week?
Well, the scapegoat has been deserved for a long time has been Darius Boyd, but he hasn't been scapegoated. I think Corey Oates is almost due his scapegoating. He's in the back row, and I will not be shocked if the following week or the week after he's on the bench.
Yeah. Also from D. Darrinson, would you rather Haas, Fifita, White and Seabold all leave, or Haas, Fifita, White and Seabold all stay?
Stay.
I'm stayed because there's a chance Seabold get run over by a bus and White gets done by the Rhino, so, you know.
Yeah.
Man, this just keeps going forever. It Mike is. Harding, ace.
I'm glad we didn't plan anything else for the podcast other than questions and a bit of chat, because we're going to... If we did two game reviews and a preview, we'd be here for 4 hours.
We've ended up covering probably most of the talking points wanted to. We're already an hour 10 into this, so... Mike Harding, 8. Just remember, people, Siebes hasn't missed one tackle, hasn't bombed one try, hasn't dropped one ball. He can train them so they are hot as, do everything right, but when they run on the field, it's up to the players. It wasn't the players he gave up last Thursday night.
I mean, are you sure he's ever trained them hot as? Are they looking good in training? I mean, if he's training them hot as, they seem to be snapping hamstrings every 2 weeks. Isn't that part of the problem?
You can say it wasn't him that gave up, but, like, as you said before, other teams, like, even the Bulldogs players, they're not giving up on Dean Pay in the middle of games. That side's worse than this side.
Well, we're recording during the Bulldogs game, right? And the score was 24-0 to the Roosters at halftime. Not great. There's 20 minutes left in that game, and what's the bloody score? 24-0 to the Roosters, not 59-0 to the Roosters. And it might blow out again still, but the Bulldogs team is way worse than our side.
Yeah, and Tedesco's playing in that game too.
He is.
Yeah, it's just... You can say he hasn't given up in the middle of a game, but, like, these players wouldn't be doing the same thing for different coaching. Look at the difference with the Knight side.
I know.
Like, they gave up on Brownie. That's because of how he was coaching. They look like the third best side in the comp right now.
But they didn't believe in what he was putting down. It's like, just think of yourself, mate. Think when you've had a bad manager or a boss you didn't like, and you tell me how you performed as opposed to when you had one you did like.
Exactly. Yep. Harvey G, how are you guys doing outside of football at the moment? Hope you're both well.
Mate, I can't separate the two. My job's footy. Like, like it's tough.
From Bing Pringle. I'm doing pretty good though, Harvey. Cheers. Bing Pringle, Broncos really need to become a one city team if they are to succeed, and perhaps every Thursday and Friday night game. 7 day break, no other team gets, and sign the 2018 Coach of the Year. What are they? They do. They have. Oh, piss them off to Perth.
Yeah.
From great underscore Nehemiah. This is a very similar feeling to 09 to 014, except this time Queensland will lose Origin indefinitely because of Walter's ineptness and New South Wales players coming through, e.g. Turbo, Paulo, Radley versus Mbai, Norman and Ben Hunt. Thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with you with that. Like, I mean... God, we have to go over this again, but the club thought they were bigger than Wayne, but they really kind of weren't. it's back to what it was like without him.
This feels more depressing than that period. We had, obviously, 09 was just off that, the great season we had, finished obviously with Melbourne there. Mm. 11, we made a prelim, which we probably should have done better, except for Beal. We
signed for Lau.
Even in 14, we only just scraped the 8, but we had... Obviously, Ben Hunt looked great. You know, like, there was stuff every year or two that you were kind of keen about. Whereas here, I mean, yeah, maybe in a year's time, you're like, yeah, it wasn't that far between.
The worst part of the Broncos right now is the fact we can't score bloody points. As I mentioned earlier, the point scoring. That's like, even, like, we mean you spoke last year, mate, how we couldn't think of 3 tries to put in the intro if we did it again.
Yeah, and it's not even then that you're losing, because obviously you're losing, but it's just boring to watch as well.
It is. What is it? Is it Titans have scored the same amount of points we have at Suncorp? We played the three times. We have 28 games and 28 points in three games at Suncorp. It's great.
Righto, last one from at Swarzy. Sounds like you fellas need a rebuild. How does Brownie sound to take over Seabold?
No, worse. I know they're being tongue-in-cheek, and I know I hate Brownie, but that's one of the very few downgrades available.
Is he a downgrade?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he's a downgrade.
Yeah, he is.
But that's it.
Sweet. Okay, I mean, I did originally plan on coming on here and doing a bit more rabbiting on, like, when the Roosters game finished, I was going to come on and do some of the talking we did 2 years ago about when they got rid of Wayne, and I think all of it's still accurate, but I think everyone said everything about where the club's going and the things that are wrong and, you know, why Glenn shouldn't be captain and the other guys shouldn't be captain and blah, blah, blah. So I don't think we can bother covering that, but if you got anything you want to cover on that before we touch on news or on these last two games?
Nah, I'm...
Yeah,
I think we talked a fair bit about the games in between different comments. Yeah,
I mean, it is sad that, like, so Xavier Coates was sick, but it's sad that he comes to the team and then we're literally the only player we have is kicker to Xavier.
Yeah, like...
That was sad.
That was every attacking end of a set we had.
That was the only plan we had the entire game, because the last 2 weeks, the only plan we ever had was Brody would bomb at the end of the sets, and now it's like, well, bomb to Xavier.
But also, if he's going to come down with, like, 100% of the balls, let him catch it in goal, not 5 metres outside.
Yeah, put a good kick in. And that was also very big frustrating thing the last few weeks, is this confusion that to be a game manager, you have to make all the, do all the kicking, which Croft's doing. The one time Milford kicked to Coates, we scored, because it was a perfectly weighted kick.
Oh, well. Yes.
Okay, so let's do some news. So obviously the Ben Teo stuff happened, which is great. And for me, it's great because I don't even care if he plays a game or not. Like, I know he's already played, but it's like just having an experienced person off the field around the club, and the guy who's got his track record is going to be perfect. I think we kind of touched on that in the past already. Do you want to talk about Ben Teo at all, Simo?
No, not really. It's just, yeah, similar to what you said. He's been all over the world, played in different sports. He knows how to train, knows how to do that, all that.
Mm.
And it's the kind of thing, too, if you've got a side full of young kids, like, you just teach them how to be a footballer, you know. It's very different in the NRL from when you're under 18s, so...
Yeah, 100%. Other news we'll touch on. Let's go first. Isaac Luke has joined the club to the end of the season. Personally, I actually like the signing. I know a lot of people are questioning the McCulloch stuff, but I like it. How do you feel, Simo?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's better than McCulloch, so I just think we've upgraded.
That's like, it, mate. And like the thing that's been left out of this, it wasn't like just a one-for-one replacement. This is one of the decisions I do agree with. Like, McCulloch... We've got, if he doesn't come back next year, we've saved like $600,000 off the cap next year and whatever they took this year. And then what we need, we don't, like, I know letting McCulloch go when Turpin, you know, when thinking Turpin to say if it was a bit stupid, but it's like, say, you know, Luke comes in now and Turpin comes back. If we're going to split hooker duties, at least Luke actually suits playing 20, 30 minutes off the bench. McCulloch is garbage in that role.
Yeah, the only role McCulloch could do was play the first 30 and make him tackles. And it's like, at least if you got Turpin and Isaac Luke, you could flip him around whichever way you wanted to.
That's it. And Luke again, angry little guy, and we'll put in and whatever. You know, if he's not there next year, I don't care. It's just, this is the spot where we just sat, got left in after McCulloch left, Turpin got injured, and then, you know, Seguiaro was supposed to be in the books, but he cheated. He did drugs, so... And I actually didn't mind Pakes last week, by the way. He's just obviously he's got some development to go, but he started to, you know, have a bit better vision, if you ask me last week. But, I don't know who will start, not this week. I think this week Pakes will start. I don't know who starts next week, Pakes or Luke, but I'm hoping they split minutes.
Yeah.
Yep. Last bit of news, Katoni Staggs with Dunny's hammy might be 4 weeks or more. It's a grade 2, so NRL physio's general indication is 4 weeks or more. And... I hate this because if they play Glenn there for 4 weeks, our back line has Darius Boyd and Alex Glenn in it. If your captain can't start in his best position, like, what are we doing here?
Brody Croft is starting at 7.
Yeah, that's it. Like, if somehow our team has Glenn in the backs and Oates in the front, in the forwards, what the fuck is going on?
Yep.
Well, I don't know. I hate that. So, I don't know why it's not Tessie New... And I don't care about being afraid of Bradman Best, because, like, it's like, that's like when they used to put Bo Scott on GI. It's okay. Okay, maybe you might have made a couple of good tackles on GI, but what about the other side of the fucking ball?
Yeah, it's got to score points to win games.
That's it, mate. Oh well, I think that's all we got. All we've had to rabbit on about. I mean, all year you'll hear more of our agendas and other bitching about the Broncos. I don't really feel like piling on those other things as I said earlier. So I think that's about it.
Yeah, you know, I'm done too.
Okay, hopefully we'll be back after the next game. Hopefully it'll be a win, and we can at least be somewhat positive. But I'm all in, like, Pangai. I don't know if we win in this game. For me, it's like Pangai enthusiasm. That's what I'm thinking.
Pangai revenge game, mate. If we win this week, we're going to record about 4 podcasts before the weekend ends.
That's it. Well, mate, I'm house sitting. I have time. We're not recording Boom Rookies until Sunday either, I don't think. So, mate, I'm ready to gronk off a bit with if we win.
Righto. Sounds good.
Okay. See that, everyone.
That's out. Hey! Hey! We're the Broncos, the mighty Broncos. We keep fighting every second till the end. We're the Broncos, the greatest team on earth. We're the heart of all Queensland. Never stop, we never rest. On and on, we beat the best. Never giving up, we win maroon and gold. For the league, we risk it all. Miles above, we're standing tall. We're the finest and the greatest goal of all. We're the Broncos, the mighty Broncos. We keep fighting every second till the end.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.